Good morning and welcome, everyone. Today is Thursday, March 23rd, 2017. It is 9 a.m. This is the Josephine County Board of Commissioners convening for a county administrative workshop. We had a little bit of trouble getting the recorder started. It reminded me of a light bulb that I changed with City Councilor Jim Williams out at Chinook Park. How many government agencies does it take to change a light bulb in a county park? And there's, you know, park person, me, liaison, city councilor. We got done.
That was hilarious.
It didn't last very long. It burnt out. There was a short wire. Anyway, we tried. We gave it the old college try.
That was job security.
Well, it was. We're going to try to get through this agenda rather quickly today because we have a memorial service, unfortunately, for Pat Foley at 10 o'clock and other appointments today. So we are going to start with legal counsel. Order number 2017-017 in the matter of determination as to a dog impounded under the authority of ORS 609.155 for killing, wounding, injuring, or chasing livestock. And in this case, it was chasing and wounding a horse. So we had this hearing on Tuesday of this week, the 21st, and since then, not necessarily the owner, but the handler or the caretaker, or there's an official word for that. What is that?
Keeper
of the dog has pretty much instigated a public campaign to save the dog. I don't believe the public is really getting the full story. I was called yesterday from Channel 5, just one news agency, on the issue and didn't feel it was appropriate for me to really divest some of the issues that were raised in the hearing as we hadn't codified our findings yet as a board. I had reviewed those and had a couple of changes and suggestions, and those have, I think, been made and are presented for us today. But in light of everything that's going on, I think the public scrutiny of this issue might bring about a need to institute a historic thing that we used to do, and we've done in the past, is have a hearings officer. I also believe this is necessary because we didn't reach a unanimous conclusion as a board. And so, for whatever reason, Commissioner Morgan did not support the idea of the will of the majority of the board, didn't articulate either for time or reasons not stated why that was. But I think in light of that, and to do due diligence, perhaps a third-party review by a hearings officer of this case would be prudent. And so I'm just throwing that out there as a possible suggestion.
It's just one option. Is that step in addition to, in other words, if she goes to a hearings officer and doesn't get the answer that she's seeking, can she still appeal it to civil court, to the circuit court?
The board. So then it does come back here.
Having already done that and rendered a decision, though, I would believe she would be appealing our previous decision, and that would be able to be taken to court. She can take it to court right now. I don't believe hearing from a hearings officer changes that structure.
Okay.
She's afforded that opportunity regardless.
That's correct.
So
now would we be establishing this going forward?
I think that it might make
a good idea to do this on every one of these cases as just another step.
It might make sense. I feel that it's probably in the best interest of anybody coming before the board that they're coming before a professional hearings officer in that situation. They certainly will be probably more well-versed with maybe the options or the processes. I felt ours was kind of ad hoc yesterday. There wasn't a structure like there is for a land use hearing. And it is a semi-quasi-judicial as it's appealable to a court. It should be run by, I think, a professional hearings officer. So in counties where there's a county judge over in Crook County, they go to school to facilitate a hearing. They take classes, special classes for that. I have never had
that. When I was a hearings officer with the community corrections for local control cases, that was something that they would have hearings officer training through the board.
And I think that's reasonable. That should be a reasonable expectation of the party.
So we would send this to a hearing officer?
We'd send the case. We wouldn't send that.
We'd send the case.
We won't codify this.
He starts all over. correct?
To a degree. Yes. We've had our hearing. Yeah, he starts all over that, or she.
And this is our opinion on
the hearings officer would start all over.
He may hear something different. Or,
yeah.
Okay.
We would probably have to codify this after the hearings officer's decision, regardless of which way it went, so that if it was an unfavorable decision for the proponent, they'd have something to appeal. Right now, they don't have anything necessarily. We don't have a decision of the board that's codified by the findings and an order and that sort of thing. So
well,
that's how I see this process.
I'm in favor of establishing a hearing officer. I always like another set of eyes to look at these.
I don't think it's a bad thing
no
at all.
With that.
I think, you know, putting the dog down is the last thing anybody wants to do. And frankly, the last thing I wanted to do with Tuesday morning was to spend it in a hearing reviewing this issue. It's the dog owners. I think that's where it has to come back for me. That's how it got here. Not the dog, the dog owner.
And the question I had is, Leah Harp is the dog keeper, not the dog owner.
Right, right.
And I noticed in this, in the findings, that Leah Harp is the one that has to pay the fines.
We've changed that.
Okay.
I think you got the draft I got, and I made those recommendations to legal that you really can't hold somebody else responsible for their kid or their dog. It's really the owner. It'd be the same thing for property. You don't hold the renter responsible. I mean, they may be the responsible party, and in this situation, they would be. But it's the owner who's ultimately.
So I'm going to have the hearings officer review that in light of the facts.
Yeah, sounds good. Like there's an issue right there. Who is the responsible party? The hearings officer can make that determination.
Okay, all right.
I'd appreciate a motion.
I make a motion that we have to establish a position of a hearings officer for cases like this on a case-by-case basis.
Well, let's just go with this one first off.
This one, okay.
And then
we'll order number,
see how it goes.
New order number 2017-017.
Do we actually have an order?
No.
We wouldn't really have it. Sorry, Commissioner DeYoung, it's not your fault. It's draft, and it's not really an order until we've approved it. I think that maybe we could go with...
in the matter of determination to a dog, the authority of... ORS 609-155 for killing, wounding, injuring, or chasing livestock, and imposition of civil penalties.
Yes, and the dog's name is Kron, known as Kron.
Second, what I think was the updated motion.
Yeah, it's basically how it's... it's been moved and seconded to refer the matter of determination as to a dog impounded under the authority of ORS 609.155 for killing, wounding, injuring, or chasing livestock and imposition of civil penalties as a dog known as Kron to a hearings officer.
I excuse myself because I have a phone call.
Yeah.
Can you call for vote before you walk out the door?
Vote?
Yes.
Any other discussion on this?
I would like us to also do this on every case, just as a side note.
Dog cases of this nature will go to a hearings officer if able. Okay. All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries 3-0. Great. I'd also like Wally and I to be given the ability to put together a press release on this issue to clarify the county's position and that we've referred it to a hearings officer for further review and due diligence on this case, spelling that out for the public. I think a lot of public doesn't understand why we're hearing this in the first place. Why is the board? I got a lot of inquiries on that issue. And so,
a lot of the public don't understand rural requirements either.
Urban requirements.
Yeah.
Dogs can't go chasing animals and roughing them up.
Dealt with that a year or so ago with somebody shooting a dog that attacked their dog while they were walking.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And in this process, maybe the board would delegate one member to work with either myself or somebody to determine a funding source for the hearings officer, be it the Animal Control Fund, board budget, whatever the case may be.
Your budget? Just kidding. We'll figure it out. Yeah, it shouldn't be that expensive, but we will, definitely.
Just so the board...
I would suggest Arthur help with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so anyway, it's been entered into the discourse now, so we can kind of...
Well, you and I are the liaison. It's in your office right now. We'll figure out how to fund it.
Okay.
It's not a issue for the board. Item number two is department business updates. We have an economic development request for document scanning projects, phase one through three. How many phases are there? Item 2A, two. Thanks, Wally. Economic development request, registration software annual fee.
Okay, we began to talk about this last week, and what we're trying to do is get 50 years of paper documents electronic so that when you're looking up a property file or somebody comes in to inquire about something, everything is there in one spot. So right now, like I said, it's since 1973, all of our land use files are in paper. I shouldn't say all of them. Some were scanned at one point, but not all of them. So when you want to find a file, you actually end up looking in eight different places.
How is that possible? Can you explain that? I've heard that several times, and that seems like a file management challenge. So you're going to have to fix that before you have all these scanned, or the scanning process will have cross-reference opportunities where it's, you know, property number, blah, 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 and it really doesn't matter in what order you scan it. It always goes to find everything on that property?
That's exactly right.
Okay.
Right, it all gets scanned by a number. So our proposal is to take the room of boxes that is now up and down the hallways,
mm-hmm.
and that is the first one, and those all get filed by a number, of a tax and lot number. And then from there, we're moving on to the file cabinets, which also have that same numbering system. On down the line, and then the bookshelf of files, and then upstairs of files,
sure.
storage room
so
of files.
So they're just eight different locations?
They're just all different locations, right? Some are still down in that storage unit that we rent. So anyways,
they're all pertinent?
They're all, yes. They're the only ones we're looking at scanning are the individual land use files. So if you had a permit, a rezone, etc., we're not scanning any of planning plan commission files.
Okay, good.
Budget files, none of that.
Great.
It's just the land use.
Germane to a property.
Right, because really that's all we need to access. We no one ever goes back in those old plan commission files.
Right.
As a matter of fact, we've kept them from day one, and our next step of this process is to go through and start purging what we're not required to have, just because it's taking up space. We don't have the room.
That's important.
I mean, it doesn't make sense to continue to rent a storage unit for stuff we're never going to use. Anyway, so that's what this project does.
Can you explain it a little bit about why there's three phases and
sure.
what the alternatives are for like cost and stuff? Because you're not the only department that has files that need to be scanned.
Right.
The clerk's office does. Legals does. So it's really, how is it that yours is the priority of the county? Because if we had $1 million, we'd scan everybody's. Does that make sense?
It does. And, you know, I think if, as departments want to scan their files and get them electronic, they should be budgeting for that. This, of course, it would be coming out of the economic development budget is the request. And I view it as tied to that permitting project. And the reason why we're proposing it to come out of there is because of the Chamber's BRE survey and this Ready workshop that identified the inefficiencies in the permitting process through our office.
I'm going to never think that I don't want to support this, but I'm always going to ask critical questions and
sure.
maybe push back a little bit.
Sure.
I would assume that 95% of those files that are in your office are for residential properties.
Yes, because most of our land is residential.
Right. So.
Yeah.
Is it a BR or anything?
We're not building capacity for employment opportunities on residential lands by having an efficient process of facilitating residential development. You see that there's a disconnect of the nexus. I get it. If you don't have a place to live, you can't really have a business here. But maybe the priority of phase one is to scan in all commercial, industrial, you know, business-focused types of properties so that when somebody does come in on a six-acre commercial lot, you aren't going eight places and everything is right there. Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense,
okay.
But let me explain.
Okay.
First of all, we don't file anything by commercial, residential, industrial, so there'd be no way to pull those out and just do those. The other thing is the BRE survey surveys developers, window manufacturers, excavators, they're the ones that are businesses, as well as the contractors, have really identified a problem with the office.
Okay.
And that whole system. And we know there's a problem. I wish Dan, Commissioner DeYoung, was here, because he has firsthand problems with our office, and that the time and the inefficiencies involved with it. Just to explain, and the clerk has done a lot of scanning. They have budgeted and done a lot of scanning as well. I don't know about the other offices. When I talked with IT, they had explained to me that the clerk's office did scanning and they used the same company. He wasn't aware of anybody else that has begun to scan their files.
I think that's a pretty good answer.
And we're being that, I know Community Corrections has done that as well, but
the nexus of why residential properties matter as far as economic development.
Yes, the one tie that I can combine is that because of the backlog of how they're dealing with residential properties and the time it takes them to do that, it limits how much time availability the planners are to address the businesses and the economic development, because their time is tied up trying to track down the residential
stuff. That's another good point. It's important that we point out these elements of tying it to the economic development funds, that really tight of saying this is an effective use of these.
When I did my tour up there, that was one of the questions about hiring a planner level one, that, we're running out of time we're at the max of time on dealing with permitting requests because of how much we're trying to accomplish. So if the ability to get through those quicker would be more efficient for business opportunity.
Okay.
I do want to answer your question about the phases. So what we did was phase one basically is the storage room. So we had a storage room that was full of files. We had to empty it so we could, when we co-located, we had to give that space to a planner. So all of those files got put in the hallways.
Internal storage, because you have external storage.
Right.
Okay, internal storage.
So the phase one is the internal storage that was in that room. That's 185 boxes. Phase two is all the filing cabinets. It's kind of like a little maze when you went through. That's what phase two is. Phase three is basically all the files that are on shelves and then the big properties like Paradise Ranch. You're looking at 10 boxes, stuff like that.
Because there's 200 different.
Yeah, there's a ton of them. And then phase four are all the boxes that are stored upstairs in a storage room. And phase five is the last one. That is the 59 boxes that are in that storage unit.
So you're only looking at funding phase one through three. However, I'm hearing Paradise Ranch has got legs. There's issues starting up with that. And so if there's a way to integrate those 12?
Well, what I did, so I asked them time-wise, what can they scan? What they can scan by the end of our fiscal year was phases 1, 2, and 3. So that's why I'm asking for the $35,492 for this fiscal year.
$35,492.
And then phase 4 and 5 is a separate fiscal year, and that'll be in the upcoming budget that you see. And then from there on, depending on how much workload we have, staff will continue to keep up with the scanning. We may have to every other year just have them come back and do bulk scanning.
We're not too far away from hiring a part-time person to do this. What's the efficiencies with hiring this company as opposed to a person?
Or even
a temp? A couple temps for a year? Have you explored that? I'm sure that's an option.
Sure. So this would be $47,000 to dedicate to a staff person if you wanted to do that. You would also have to buy the professional scanning equipment. And to be honest with you, I'd rather go with I don't think we're saving money. The other thing is...
Well, that's what you have to figure out.
Right.
Doing the math, and because your need to scan or the county's need to scan isn't going to end with your project. I'd rather spend $60,000 investing in that infrastructure that I could go, put into the finance departments or somebody else.
Sure.
I have to look at it holistically of saying, well, then I could hire that person to go down to
scan the whole county.
Maybe we look at that is, I don't know, I don't want to take your project and put it on hold
sure.
because, wait a second, I don't
we
want
need
to solve
walk
the
through
world.
The office,
yeah. Yeah, right.
But I will say this, too. So this company that we're going with, they guarantee that everything is scanned according to Oregon statute requirements. They make
That's
sure
a legible element.
It has to be a certain DPI and everything.
Yeah.
It's very specific what it has to be scanned to. I'm not saying you couldn't train somebody to that effect,
mm-hmm.
but there's more time invested in that. There's also the aspect of they do quality control, so they stop and they check to make sure all the documents in there are scanned. The other thing is this, what they're doing, so they have a team that goes up there and they can do all this. If you did this by yourself, this project would probably take about 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you from experience, you'd probably go through about 5 people.
Yeah.
I tried doing this at a previous job where we hired somebody to do it, and it is such a monotonous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Some people last a week and they just bail out on you. And then you start all over with that training and that learning curve. What this does is it guarantees us somebody that does this professionally, they can do it quickly.
And we have somebody that we can hold accountable if we start getting
Absolutely.
Into it and it isn't right. And
right.
you can go back to them, like a water filtration system.
Yes.
If you just hired some guy, there's nobody to go to, you know.
Right.
It's like, what are you going to do? Are you going to hold him accountable? No, you're going to start over, and you already paid that guy.
And the other thing when you hire somebody to do this in-house, and this is what they do, they go like this, and they go like this, because it's so boring. Whereas this
I counted seeds in college for a job. Itty-bitty little seeds.
Yeah, so when you're in the
long
run.
2.5 years.
Wow.
Are they planning them now? Out?
Jeez, really?
I emptied trashies, so I didn't count anything.
So this is private sector?
Yes, we put it out for bids. And this is
for not being
sure. We put it out for bids, and we made a point to send it to every Oregon document scanning company we could find. The only one that replied was a scanning company out of Washington, which just so happened to be the same one that the clerk uses anyway. So we tried to do it locally or in Oregon, and they didn't respond.
Clerk's happy, and John says it's working out.
I was just going to say we got there.
Do you mind coming up, because there's a couple of questions I have about server capacity. You can't just hire a company like this to do $40,000 worth of work and it not have an impact on, wait a second, we don't have space for all this.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Or we're putting it on the cloud and we're having to pay for space. You want to talk about a little bit about?
Sure. Good morning, commissioners. The first test files we've gotten were excellent. Sent an email today.
Great.
Quality control was good. The ability to get the data is really easy. We'll spend about $1,500 for something called an import agent to get it into Laserfish. And other than that, we'll need to expand the memory that Laserfish uses. But that's fairly reasonably priced, just static memory storage.
John and I have talked about that, and that is not quite $2,000, which will show up in the budget that comes before you if this is approved.
So that's coming out of economic development or your budget? The
storage is going to come out of planning.
Okay, yeah.
It's like, you know, I'm willing to help get that the efficiencies people have complained about.
Totally.
But then you're on
your
the planning's
then
on their own.
Then you're on your own, right.
Yeah.
Okay, I get it. Sounds good.
They have to pay
over.
The annual memberships. Not this one. There isn't an annual membership.
I think something else that goes with this, if you're doing that online software, but everything's via paper, it doesn't make it. You're not taking full advantage of the system you just bought to try to increase efficiencies. If you're still dealing with stuff historically, 100 boxes of paper.
I agree 100%.
That doesn't make... I think you can't do one without the other.
I agree.
And we already bought the other one, so we really have to bite the bullet and get the other one done.
I couldn't agree more.
Is the Laserfish system the most effective with dealing with the software? I mean, is that... To me, Laserfish is looking at 100-year-old stuff or 50-year-old stuff. So is that, I've never heard of it used in the modern capacity like that.
Well, there are other systems, but then we would have to change everything, right, John?
Well,
we would
have
to switch that.
We only have one document management system. And it does just fine with modern documents. It's all that Laserfish is the ability to attach metadata to a folder or to a document and to scan it and OCR it so that if you search for something that is in the document, you can actually find that.
Which is helpful.
I think that's what we need. I don't know if
yeah.
we need maybe more, but maybe in the future. Okay, sounds
much good. More efficient than what we were doing at Community Corrections. So,
so we've still got 35 minutes and trying to, I think we're okay with the first one, economic development for the scanning, registration software annual fee.
Okay, this registration software, we're not even sure we're going to go with this. What I'm doing is asking for a maximum approval for us to explore other options and keep this process moving. So basically what this is when you come to the Community Development Department, right now you'll get sometimes 13, 14 people in there and they're all kind of milling around. I'm not sure who's next, whatever. What this does is you can either have a kiosk or a person that's manning the kiosk, and basically they record people as they come in, who they're there for. They send the alerts. For example, I don't sit up front, so if there's something for me, I get the alert that somebody's waiting for me up front. Or you'll have two planners up there and a building official.
This one doesn't feel that teased out. And let's say yes, go still work on it. We're not reaching a decision here yet, but let's maybe you and I figure out what exactly do you need, because already I don't want to have somebody dedicated to doing something plus a software system. You know what I mean? And I don't think that's your intent, but
yeah.
Let's move forward with the first request, and you and I work on the other one and bring back a really solidified proposal of this is what this is going to do and solve this problem. Because I think you made great progress in the office already. You were over there yesterday. There was a new bench. I think that's going to actually be a really great design to break up the two different kind of offices, the counter.
Mm-hmm.
You're making good progress in the software and in the scanning. Let's hold off on that one for just a little bit.
And keep it in mind that one of the big complaints we've heard all along is you better streamline that planning process.
Yeah.
And so anything we can do, little big,
and the other,
we really need to look at it.
One before we get too far is really having your economic development budget proposed so that we know you're doing this and you're not doing this.
Right.
And right now we could say yes all day and, oh, wait a second, then you're done. You spent all the money, but you didn't know you wanted also to do this. And I'd like
sure.
to see what the scope looks like. So that we're, because we're changing up, like, you've got the latitude to change it all up, propose something totally different. So see what we can.
I'm really excited for you to see this coming year's one, because I feel that we're actually going to be able to do some real economic
good.
Development.
Yeah, we want some a good report card when we get done spending that $400,000.
I hope so.
Great.
Okay. I'm going to leave this. Commissioner, can you hand this to Terry? That'll just have to be signed and returned to me then. So. Okay.
There was one element before you left on Community Development Department. So Ms. Spencer and I were working on a couple of code enforcement or complaints yesterday. It brought to mind something that Commissioner Don Rasher over in Jackson County kind of instituted over there. And it was an opportunity for the liaison, which he was, to get a weekly written report on the code enforcement process. That can only come to one commissioner, because it would be considered pending litigation on some of those cases, so it would be a confidential document. As soon as we share it with all of it, it had to come through legal in a confidential memo for it to stay that way. But a direct contact on from me to the office would be okay. I just like to track some of those things about making sure that we're, you know, leaning into the issues that I think we see are issues. We've got sound. That sound one, I think there was an email that went out. That's a real issue, you know. And then some others that are maybe taking up time are, no, you know what, I don't think the board sees that as a real high priority. Which just making sure that we're tracking on that would be really helpful. I think for your office it'd be helpful for me to know that. So
we you know, we're getting sometimes about 100 complaints a week.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do have to prioritize them, high, medium, and low. That does not make people happy. I will say this, at the current time, it's difficult to do that on a weekly basis. I mean, it's very time consuming. With the software, I can say it will generate a report anytime you request it. So I don't have a problem with us looking at it. No, I just saying,
yeah.
Once that software is in place, it's going to be really easy.
Okay.
So.
I would like maybe the top 10 then, somehow structured that you guys can do that doesn't take you the whole week to put together a half
the
a
top
page
10
report,
reported each week?
Something like that you're pursuing, that you're working on. And the historic ones, I think we've given direction on where are they? Because I think that's been a priority, that they don't just go out of here and die. Because sometimes, I mean, years ago, I've done them, and I don't even know what happens to them after they leave this office. So that would be really helpful. And that could be a static thing that, you know, you just have these addresses, and this is what's been done on this week, and sometimes nothing.
Okay.
that would be helpful.
Hopefully you all did get that email which showed which cases were still active, which were dismissed, mm-hmm. and all that nature. So, okay.
Might be something along those lines. Great. We can work on it. Thank you. Thank you very much, John.
Thank you,
John. Glad you were here. Public Works, Mr. Dijonbe.
Oh, that's the other thing. Can I just make a request on that?
Yeah.
Since the policy allows us to do up to $50,000 without going for administrative, and since there is no meeting next week, could it just be final today so that we can get going working on a contract? Because it's going to take weeks to get the contract done.
I don't mind doing that, but because it isn't in the budget and it's $36,000, I think we need to send it to a weekly business session.
I know the policy says we don't as long as you agree, but if that's, we'll just...
Also, the policy is if it's in the budget.
So it's good if it's in the budget and it's in the way you can do it.
It has to be a budgeted item.
I'll just have Leah start working on the contract.
Yes. The board...
Anticipation next time.
Yes. Or we could approve it and ratify the decision when we come back. It's up to you guys.
I have no problem with you getting going on it.
If the contract's going to take weeks, it won't be done. Maybe we can sign the contract and approve this on April 5th.
That would be nice because we really want to get boxes.
We'd love to do that.
Okay.
Under admin?
Yes.
And then the board will speak to
you? I will. I don't mind. It's great. Yeah, it's a good, easy project.
Thank you.
Mr. Dijonbe? Good morning.
Excuse me.
Nice to
meet you. Thank you. I'm here for two items. The first one is basically the paperwork which Commissioner Hare has seen numerous times. It's ODOT's modifying the agreements with Josephine County for the different phases of bridge replacement project. This one's for the Spillway Bridge out at Lake Salmac. We're entering into the construction phase. Actually, the bid opening is today at ODOT, so I'm anxious to see what the bids come out to be. But this actually funds what ODOT believes will be the construction cost, and then we provide the match, which we've actually already done, and move forward with the project.
Are you familiar with this, Commissioner DeYoung?
Yes.
There's nothing on my screen. It goes through all the pages, they're all blank. That's a first.
I've gotten that memo that the memory is too high to display the thing and you have to kind of close out and start over.
Oh. It's probably because I have too many things open. Terry's always like, why do you have them? It's like, I'm a busy person doing stuff. Well, if you're familiar with it, Commissioner DeYoung is a liaison to Public Works, and it's been a project we've been working on at this point. We're just kind of moving forward.
Yeah, it's been with prior commissioners, and I just got killing the tail end of it.
Yeah.
But definitely necessary.
It's a
project that's been in the work for a long time. And
what's the financial impact?
We have a 10.2% match, which we have already budgeted. And
3.27.
Yeah.
Just kidding. All right, we can move this forward without objection.
I think the sooner we can get that project done in the first place.
Well, having it bid is a big.
Yeah.
It's scheduled to be construction to be started this year, and hopefully we'll only have the closure for a few months this summer. And
so yeah, the financial impact to that resort and that area is big.
So mm-hmm. Get it done quickly. This is an amendment, so I think this is a consent calendar item. And then without objection, we can move it to that portion of the calendar. Item number B2 is order number 2017-016 in the matter of an approval of temporary closure of Fruitdale Drive during removal of hazardous trees.
This one I have some knowledge on, but since I was here for the other one, they nominated me to be here for both. The power company has, I'm going to get the number of trees wrong, there's like 27 trees in the right-of-way in that section of Fruitdale that they believe needs to come down because of, that's the main feeder that the power company says actually goes out to Cape Junction, and so they want those trees out, and some of those have been issues for us as the road department as well. So, if they can close the road, they can get the work done fast, and well, relatively fast.
What portion of Fruitdale?
It's basically from Canyon Road out to 99. There's only a couple of houses through there, but it will close that route.
And there's an alternative to that?
Yeah.
You don't have to go that way because you can go down to Rogue River Highway.
You can go down to Carnahan. And
yeah, correct.
It's pretty well. It looks to me like a bypass is
easy.
Minimal.
Yeah, okay, great.
All the roads are in there too.
Yeah. And we'll have signs up and we'll do...
When did they want to do this? Because if they have to wait till we come back on the 5th...
Well, actually, we're hoping to get it signed today because they, I believe, want to start on the 5th or the 10th, somewhere in the through there. So...
Well, usually we do road closure kind of things at the weekly business session because they're kind of an impact to the area, but usually they're like, you know, it's Selmac Bridge Road and you have to go, you know, 10 miles around
yeah,
if you wanted to
yeah.
get to the resort. This one is, you know, not that big of an inconvenience. It's kind of like closing that bridge. You can go the other way, the
right.
Sand Creek Bridge. It's not that.
Well, and I look at it from the standpoint, you close it now for a couple, for how long do you think this is going to take? 2-3 days?
There was a time frame in there.
We can't start on the 5th. Legally, by the own order, it says it has to have 2 weeks' notice prior of anticipated road closure to the neighbors. And this was supposed to be...
It's the week of the April 10th through the 14th.
And this was supposed to be to us by March 17th, so we're already a week behind on what this schedule is in this wording, so I don't know if the order even needs amended. Oh, wait, no, that was a report from the superintendent on the 17th.
Yes.
My bad.
Yeah.
So they're saying a week.
Yes, or less.
I look at it from the standpoint of, you know, it's their recommendation to remove those 30 trees. And if they don't, and one of them comes across there, cuts Cave Junction off, what's the impact? How long is that street going to be closed then? And repairing the lines and everything else. That's almost, it's a necessity.
Cave Junction?
I suggest we move forward with this.
A week sounds kind of like a long time to close that road.
This is what they feel is worst case. So we always typically tell you guys it will take a week, and then we're hoping for 3 days or 4 days
right.
or something.
So if you so take 3 days and it takes a week, you're...
Yeah, that looks bad.
Have the notices already happened?
No. And it's not happening until the 10th.
Okay.
So April
10th. The notices can happen until we do something.
That's what my concern was, is looking at the dates.
Yeah.
As
we've made the signs. We've made the signs, and I believe we've got the post up, but we don't have anything up yet until after this meeting.
Well, let's move it forward ASAP, I think.
Is there a way that we can do it with an emergency clause that's not an ordinance that we can put into effect before a weekly business session?
It's just an order.
Yes,
and we can do an order anytime. It doesn't have a time frame for, you know, an ordinance requires 2 hearings, all that stuff. This is just an order. You can do it right now.
I would suggest we do that right now.
Yeah, I would suggest we approve the order, and then that way you can get notices out to the neighbors that this is going to happen on the 10th, and we could probably stay with that schedule.
Because notices have to be out by Monday in order for them
to
start by the 10th.
2 weeks.
And we will be out next week, so if it's not today, it doesn't happen on the 10th.
Yeah, and we've already pushed the power company out a week just to get this.
Okay.
And I suggest we just approve the order.
Yeah.
Do you need a motion, Chairman?
Yep.
I make a motion we approve B2, order number 2017-016, matter of approval of temporary closure of Fruitdale Drive during removal of hazardous trees.
I'll second that.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries 3-0. Thanks, Chuck.
All right. Thank you.
Item number 3, juvenile justice.
And I heard that we're going to have Sean do the whole report.
I don't know what you heard.
Well, we want it to be good.
You bring people smarter than you, that happens.
Morning.
Good morning.
Good to see you, Paul.
So we have, I know not before this board, but in the past, I'd like to get maybe once a year or so the other programs that are administered under juvenile justice, the Children's Advocacy Center,
mm-hmm.
and court mediation program. We've had those two folks in, Tina Stafford and Crosby Smith, before, and I will in the next few months get them to do an update.
Great.
For the two new commissioners, but we thought this quarterly update, it would be good. There's a lot of things happening in prevention right now, and so Sean will give a quick update. I know you guys are on a tight timeline here.
No, this is good. You've got 20 minutes to go through.
Okay, so first of all, the move from community corrections to juvenile has been fantastic for the prevention program. Both departments have been great to work with. And 3 years ago, we started a prevention specialist cohort with inviting community members, the school districts, all to come for a year-long commitment. There were 30 people that signed up for that, and 10 of those are now certified prevention specialists. And so the success of that cohort led to a second cohort that's just getting ready to test. There are 6 that will test in the next couple months. And then cohort 3 is just starting in April. And that has turned out to be a phenomenal idea, because it's everybody from across the state is asking to be part of the cohort. So the idea behind the prevention cohort is that going from when I was with Commission for Children and Families and the structure within that to the elimination of the Commission for Children and Families, and then taking the prevention program to just myself, and the capacity to be able to really reach out into the community and make a difference when we're talking about substance abuse and problem gambling, really needed to build that capacity around volunteering. And so that's where the idea of just asking community members if they were interested in learning about prevention, so that we're all talking the same terminology when we're talking about what's the best way to help our youth stay drug-free, and what's the best way to help adults in the community help our youth stay drug-free. And so through that whole process, at the state level, every county prevention coordinator has to be a certified prevention specialist, and the state always did trainings for them. And so the idea of just educating the community on the same level as our state prevention coordinators is where the whole cohort started. It really has built the capacity around. In Josephine County, we have a coalition that's starting. There are liaisons really to every middle and high school. They do Red Ribbon Week. They really have moved forward with monthly educational trainings that we have. And so our school youth surveys, which is the Oregon Healthy Teens or Student Wellness Survey that happens every year, both Three Rivers and Grants Pass have done them now since 2010, shows that we have seen a decrease in past 30-day use of alcohol, tobacco, and marijuana. This last year, we did see an increase in marijuana use, as well as tobacco use, as well as
anonymous surveys.
Yes. Yeah. And so, it's a survey that I have data going back to 2009, actually 2006, that shows the flow of
trend.
How. Yes. Yeah. Thank you. And so we saw in some areas a tremendous decrease. And then,
what do you attribute that to, and what can we do to make sure that, you know, put that program on steroids and apply it everywhere? And
well, I think
our program, or
I don't think we can point to one thing.
Okay.
I think what we can point to is our prevention program as a whole.
Okay.
It's multiple things over multiple times with multiple people, and really having that foundation of people.
How early do you start? Also, because I was thinking, if you're getting these surveys over middle schools and high schools, maybe what you were doing that was effective, if there was something, it was in the elementary schools. If you're trying to address this issue when they're getting influenced by it, it might be too late. It might, you have to preempt the being influenced so they know what to do when that situation comes about, maybe? I don't know.
I agree 100%. And so when the prevention coordinator was brought back to the county, everything was going on in the high school. And then we kind of moved it down to the middle school. So we're kind of trying to move it down to middle school. The hard part is
we've had to move it down to the layers as we've gone.
Commissioner DeYoung, I wanted to make sure that you had it on.
and don't take this wrong, but my big problem in today's world is not alcohol, marijuana, and tobacco. My big problem today is methamphetamines. Are there any doctors involved in your program that are addressing pain medications that they're giving? In my day, they said, you know, why don't you take an aspirin or Tylenol, you know, go home and have pain. They'd call me. Nowadays, if we're gonna get a niche, we're going to prescribe you. I know you can't stand the pain, so therefore I'm going to give you this whopper and tell you that knocks you clear in the next week, and after a while you can't get off of it. But that's what I'm worried about, is the progression to methamphetamines and heroin and things like that started with pain medication. It may have started with peer pressure with alcohol, tobacco, and marijuana, and then went into hard liquor and then on into complete alcoholism and stuff like that. But those we are really, really up on, and we know how to take care of that and cure it. But we are really just on the very tip of this heroin thing. And I mean, we here at County College, yep, in Wallawa County, out in absolutely nowhere, and where everybody talks cow. And here they come, you got a heroin problem in Joseph County? Yeah. So do you have? Oh, yeah. Why? And you find it, oh, yeah, well, you know, the cowboy fell off his horse and broke his knee, and so then he got on pain medication, away he went. Whereas, and I had a tooth pulled, and the guy immediately, well, you're going to need these. I said, no, I have a pretty high threshold of pain. He goes, no, you're really going to need these. And, you know, I just want you to make sure you have these. I didn't want them. I didn't need them. And I tried to. I told him, I said, don't do this. And he said, well, I'm going to call it in anyway. And I said, you know what you just did? I said, I hate to tell you. I said, you know what you just did? That they're going to fill that prescription, put it in my name, and put it on a shelf out there at Trinity. And I don't pick that up within a week. Somebody goes, he's not going to pick this up. They buy it and sell it on the street. And guess what? All no harm done. No harm, no foul. I said, you have just created an opportunity and a vehicle which with those drugs that I didn't want in the first place, I didn't want to prescribe, just hit the street. And that's what I'm worried about. So I'm not softening up alcohol, tobacco, and marijuana. I'm more interested in addictive stuff.
Okay. Those are.
So those are all addictive.
Okay.
When you're talking about youth, right, and when you're talking about youth, alcohol is the number one abuse drug. We are seeing an increase in the prescription drug. And there's the Oregon Prescribers Group. There's a local prescribers group working with doctors to really focus on that. Dentist is one of the areas where probably a little bit more focus needs to happen. But there are things happening there. The Oregon Department of Justice, we did a town hall, I don't even know, several months ago, and now they came in, they did a roundtable with the community looking at opioid abuse. And so we have a federal grant that we're going to be applying for that will give us some prevention strategies within the school, maybe school resource officer that will be on hand working with the students. And the other piece of that is educating parents. I mean, there are parents that go out and get their prescriptions, valid reasons. They're in the home. Their kid's friend come over. They go in and get that medicine. Kids are going to what they call farming parties. They're throwing pills in the dish. They're taking pills. So it goes back to that. There's a lot of community education that needs to happen, and it's not a one-time thing that's going to happen. I think when we look at those people within a heroin addiction, prescription drug addiction, you can also go down and look and see that their first experience using a substance is when they're 12 and 13, and it's alcohol and tobacco that they start out with, marijuana. We've seen in the student survey, we've seen a decrease in the perception of harm around marijuana, so we're going to see an increase mm-hmm. in the use of that. Limiting the access, the advertising, the appeal to kids around marijuana is going to be a huge thing. So they're all intertied. I mean, it is, the opioids are coming to the forefront of things right now, where meth was in the forefront 5 years ago. Does that mean that meth has gone away? No. It's still here, just as actually opioid heroin is pretty, I think the sheriff said yesterday, they're pretty
one-on-one. I know a doctor that prescribed 90
exactly
instead of 4. Just I'm going to give you 4, I'm going to give you 3 or 4 days, and this thing's going to go away. No, you get 90.
Right. And the progression that has happened with the doctors is there is a limit to what they can prescribe. I can use my mother as an example. She gets pain pills. And the doctor used to, I just couldn't believe it, would give her 180 pills. And she's like, why would you do that? She now has to go into the doctor's office every month in order to get that prescription, in order to get it filled.
My Howard McLean, that have a pain pharmacy downtown, he had a boat over at the coast called the Alice D, after my mother. Mm. I'm not real tolerant of doctors having that pain stuff.
Yeah.
A pill to do this, and a pill to go to sleep, and a pill to get up,
right,
and a pill to stay awake, and a pill to stay asleep.
Yeah.
You have a training coming up. You can't stop what you don't know.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, did that go out to all the commissioners?
It should have. It went out on, oh, maybe it didn't.
I'm wondering if that might be something just as hard of an eye opener.
Sure, that's great.
The training is a police officer from Boise, Idaho, who has become an expert in identifying paraphernalia, basically focusing on marketing to youth. And you'd be shocked when you see, oh, that's related to drugs. I didn't know that. And it's just an eye opening. I've attended it more than once. And he learns different things each time because he's always out learning more.
Is it local here?
Yes. It'll be May 3rd over at Murray Hill.
Make sure that I get an update on it.
I would
love to attend that.
Yeah.
I have a lot of personal experience with prescription drugs.
Yeah.
So then it wasn't for me, but it was for my loved ones.
Right.
And it had a real impact on my life. And so I'm really, really involved in it. And if I could have caught the doctor that prescribed all that stuff, I just went and could have gone to the whole bottom shelf and picked out, because every pill was from that doctor. If I never caught it, he wouldn't have issued it, because he wouldn't have been able to write when I was done. I was
The prescription drug abuse is coming to the forefront of things and highlighting it.
A lot of it is because they don't have anything else to do. We've narrowed down
kids
into they don't have anything else to do. We don't let them do anything.
Well, we went from many years ago where doctors were being sued because they weren't taking care of their patients. And then we went through a culture of they were over-medicating because somebody came in and said they were in a lot of pain. And so now I think with legislation that's happening, it's not an overnight cure or overnight change at all. But I think that we are making a lot of progress on it. And if anyone ever feels like their family member is being overprescribed, they can call the board, physician's board, to report them and have them, investigated or looked at. Is it reasonable? And so I think that we have a great chance to get this federal grant, because we were recognized. Jefferson County has 60% of the opiates prescribed come out of Jefferson County. We're seventh. Oregon is seventh in the United States for past 30-day use by our 11th graders. So there's.
I understand what that means, or the previous staff.
So 60% of opiates that are written in the state of Oregon are here in Josephine County.
60%.
Is that right?
All prescriptions.
That's what
opiates.
Yeah, Chief Landis gave us that.
And who writes prescriptions, Chairman?
No.
Chief Landis is the one that gave us.
But there's no way that that's possibly true. Maybe per capita, you're missing that element. That's a very important thing. But you're saying 60% of the opiate prescriptions written in the state come out of Josephine County, and there's no way that that statistic is per capita, maybe
at the program across the way.
Yeah,
we were number one in the state of Oregon.
Per capita is a very important distinction, because there's 3 million people, 4 million people in the
they
state.
They stated that we had enough prescriptions issued in Josephine County to.
We don't have that many doctors.
We have enough prescriptions in Josephine County to provide for the entire state. It's not per capita. I had one client issued 600 pills in 1 month.
Yeah, but you're saying that there's just this propensity for doctors in Josephine County to write these. Like, we don't have doctors in Portland or Eugene who have that same. They all went to the same school and said, this is the only way to solve these pain problems is by writing these prescriptions. I just, there's something intuitively in my mind that is an impossible statistic.
The amount of prescriptions being prescribed in Josephine County by ratio is greater than
by ratio of what?
By ratio of how many it is per capita. How many people do we have compared
that,
to how many
totally
pills do we have?
That
we have more pills than we can consume in our county with the people that we have.
That could totally be.
So
I don't mean to give you.
No. I was just quoting.
I need to get back on track here. When you're writing these grants,
mm-hmm.
is it helpful to have maybe a letter from the board that you submit with the grant, that the board's on board, that the Board of County Commissioners is standing behind your grant request? Does that help?
It doesn't hurt. I mean, the collaboration that we'll have letters from Three Rivers School District, Chief Landis, Sheriff Daniels, Juvenile Justice.
Yeah, that sounds...
If the board, if that's just something else that shows that you've done your due diligence in letting everybody know what this problem is and that we're all behind it, and we're all in favor of you applying for that grant, if that would help.
I'm fine with that.
Great.
Okay.
So, do you want me to come back before you when the grant's written before we submit? Do you want me to just email it to you, or you just want to do it? Do you want a chance to look over the grant?
I can facilitate it
okay.
through your liaisons. Just
okay.
We just want to be a part of it.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm glad to see you're pursuing this. I've been contacted from the state representative's office. I've been contacted by CJC's, a couple different agencies, AOC even saying, here's these opioid grants, and when I presented them to a couple different departments, they said, oh, we're not going to pursue those. You're the first department in the county.
So well,
the city is going to pursue so there's six categories that you can apply for the funding. I think there's $7 million that they're handing out, $8 million.
Is that statewide?
Not statewide. It's United States.
That's for our state, though, because this is like $90 million total or something like that, right?
No, I think it's there's only 100 grants that are going to be
okay.
distributed. And so the city is going to go after the Category 3 to help fund the Sobering Center and that help in that way. So we're going Category 1, and I haven't heard from anyone else. I put it out to others to make sure that there wasn't more than one proposal coming from this category from Josephine County. So.
Great. We're really, of course, we'll be very competitive, but we're really excited at least at the prospect because, as you know, we haven't had any sort type of school resource officer in county schools for I don't know how long. And this gives us an opportunity that the hydraulics of this would be actually getting referrals for marijuana, whatever, on up, like we get almost daily from city schools to the department again, where we can start working with these kids again, because the sheriff, they just don't have, this has been on our list, both the response to alcohol and drug issues in schools that happens every day, and we've got principals that are just pulling their hair out.
Here's, not to interrupt you, but I just got to throw this out there, but one of the things that when we talk about a sheriff in every school, a deputy in every school, that we really need to, that's going to be supplied by the citizens, but if you look at your tax bill, the citizens supply a heck of a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I would like somebody to petition the teachers union for something just like this, and just say, where's the teachers union? Instead of supporting a political candidate at the national level, why aren't you down here helping our kids? Because you keep telling us this is all about the kids. Prove it.
Prove it. We can go to a school board meeting and suggest that.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Prove it.
So
tell me where you are.
I do know that even having the school resource officer, I was involved with a family that the school resource officer was able to just look at a truancy issue. Why is the kid not in school?
Mm-hmm.
And it really, you're fighting people that are being exposed to the traumas at home via the parents being the addicts or the mental health issues. And so not only addressing with the kids the addiction stuff they're being exposed to, but the fact that why are they not in school, which if they're not in school, increases the chances of criminality later. So I love the idea of this, and that I think it's an important part of going after those kids. For me, I always want to find the balance of the school resource officer saying, are we hurting the kid's future by enforcement, or you know, versus now they're going to have a suspended license, they're going to have all these fines, all this other kind of stuff, or how do we intervene and get their support services?
And I would say that our system is 100% based on diverting the kids from just what you talked about. Keeping them in school, not filing a petition in family court for a first offense, and so on and so forth. Education, treatment, preventative, all of that. It's unheard of to take that first-time kid that we get a referral for, really for any alcohol or drug issue, and drag them into court. I mean, we deal with them. We do a lot with them.
Yeah.
The system does a lot with them. But it is 100% based on that because you run into barriers. You lose your license. We file a petition in court by statute. They lose their license for a year. They can appeal to get it back after 90 days, but sometimes that 90 days, if you're a rural student, that needs to drive to get to IV, you just got torpedoed, and so that's what the whole system. And it's been a colossal frustration for us that we can't work with these kids in the last 10 years or so. I don't even know what the number is, but I know we have principals that will remain unnamed from schools to remain unnamed, that when their safe is literally overflowing with paraphernalia and the garbage bag is so big that they finally get a warm body on the phone and say, get out here and pick this up. Do something with it. Because they know that the simple possession, half ounce here, a few grams there, they deal with it internally as a discipline issue for the kid, and it goes in literally. They can't get anybody to come out and take whatever it is, their prescription drugs also. I mean, the list goes on and on, so... This would be a great first step. Wouldn't address the whole problem.
Seems like for kids, it's the parents that need to be educated about you. Don't just leave that stuff in your medicine cabinet anymore.
Right.
Right.
And I know they did it. I didn't even think about it as a kid growing up, but there was probably stuff in my medicine cabinet, but I never...
Well, the 19 pills that are left from your
20-pill
prescription that are sitting there, the problem is it's highly... That one bottle is enough to get a kid addicted. And then when that runs out, what do you do?
Well, heroin's cheaper than getting a prescription.
Right. And the street value right now is cheaper than going and getting OxyContin or whatever.
But there's also a perception of, because a doctor legally prescribed this medicine, it must be safe to take. So therefore, it's not harmful for the kid to take it. Therefore, they start down a path. And
that must not be how they feel okay about putting like the Skittle parties together and stuff.
Yeah.
There's a prescription behind every one of those that makes it feel okay.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa, people, you're just
crazy. Well, I've got a deal that I'm asking people about right now to separate prescription drugs from habit-forming prescription drugs, but two categories. And then up here on this habit-forming prescription drug, tax the heck out of them and take half of that for prevention for your program and the other half for law enforcement, because they have to put up with the kid once he's hooked.
Mm-hmm.
And do that. But I said, well, it's a prescription drug. I said, but you can recategorize into, and I had a person in my office say, well, my husband needs those painkillers, by God. I says, guess what? You have an addict in your house. Face him.
Mm-hmm.
And she was just taken aback. She goes, well, wait a minute. And I said, no, I'm just telling you. But I've been through it. I've lived through it.
It's just the
way.
So, on that note,
but that's legal.
I guess we'd throw out a shameless plug for that huge amount of state marijuana money that comes into the county.
Yeah, yeah, both dollars.
Whether this comes to fruition or not, I think.
Sorry.
I think I'm waiting to use that one.
Yes.
He's quick.
We could.
He's not that quick.
We could definitely.
We're gonna live
say we don't get this grant, we could do a program similar to that. It's not a lot of money in the grand scheme of things, but it would be enough to address this. And it's in our minds, from prevention and juvenile justice, it's money that comes from that world.
Absolutely.
And we can use it for prevention and treatment in that world with kids, so that it doesn't, roll up.
Well, and I think in partnership with this federal grant, our local prevention plan, which is we'll start working on the next couple of months for the next biennium, will have the focus of the parents. There needs to be an educational awareness campaign around the abuse. I mean, people that are selling their house and they have an open house but they have medication in the cupboard are at risk for people walking through their house and grabbing their pills out of their, you know, people just, it's not that they just don't know.
They need to be aware.
They're not aware of
what the potential is to a kid with an idle mind.
It's not even kids. It's adults.
Or even adults.
It's, an adult.
Are they going to open every open house and, hey, can I use your restroom real quick?
Yeah.
Two people use the restroom because the downstairs is busy where there isn't a prescription. Can I use the one upstairs? You know, it's open house. Sure.
Yeah.
Go on. Wow.
Yeah.
Craziness.
So I think every potential house party needs to go through a background check.
Yeah. And Channel 5 Channel 5 is working on a media campaign. The Oregon Prescriber Group that's been meeting has had different PSAs on TV. Really more focused towards the prescriber, and we're really going to focus more on the education awareness piece and the call to action. Really, it's everybody's job that when your doctor is prescribing you 90 pills, that you say, I don't really need 90 pills, or just because a doctor gives it to you doesn't mean that you have to.
Well, let's talk about where the drug take-back options are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's educate the community about if you don't, where do you turn them in? Don't just dump them down the toilet and, harm our streams or fish. Bring them back where they're destroyed. So I don't know if you realize. I mean, I know that the per capita, maybe the numbers are skewed from that event last year. But the reason why the White House World Initiative Group came to Josephine County, and it is because we were into Grants Pass for that summit. We were number one in the state of Oregon.
Sure.
We were fourth
in the country. I just mean for it to be a per capita
issue.
It can't be statistically. I was like, okay, so if 5% of the population of the entire state, 4 million people, was on prescription drugs or had a problem with this, that's three times the number of people who live in the county, just 5% of the state. If it's 100% of our county as a problem, then it's got to be at least a 5% problem for the rest. There's nothing here but in the water, maybe? No, it's per capita, and that's just fine. But it's very important that
you
say you're
a real wet blanket on Facebook. On all these neat things come down, and you figure it out. You're so analytical. Great. But you're
I
appreciate that, because those are the things
really
need to make sense for somebody that's not in the world of prevention every day trying to do the community education.
I
want to
have
the terminology,
real characterization of how challenging this issue is.
Right.
Because if it was... no offense. If it was what you said it was, you need to build a wall around Grants Pass. No, seriously, and shut it down, because that's that catastrophic. But it's still catastrophic if we're number one. We shouldn't be.
Just the fact.
There was enough prescribed in Josephine County that every resident in Oregon could have some amount of pills.
Yeah.
It was enough that we could
actually... That boggles the mind.
Yes. It was... And I need to go back and find my notes or follow up, but there was enough pain pills prescribed in Josephine County that we actually could meet the need of every resident of Oregon.
Is there a possibility that they're prescribing pain pills and selling them out of state just like they sell, probably, I don't know how much cannabis is, there's so much?
They don't need to sell the pills out of state. There's a big enough
market
here. And you're not going to get any more money selling it out of state than if you...
So just real quick, if there's 4 million people in the state and there's 8,500, 10% of the population that has a prescription, they need 470 pills. They need to be prescribed 470 pills to have everybody in the state have one. So.
And I had one person that was prescribed 597 in 1 month.
Yeah.
And that was every month he was getting that much. His doctor contacted me and said, that person cannot physically consume that many. He has to be selling them. But one person was given.
Well, why would the doctor prescribe that?
It wasn't one doctor.
He
had a dentist. He had a foot doctor. He had a knee doctor.
He had a... pills. So you can take... The insurance is paying for the pills. And if I don't take them, I'll go sell them for $50 a whack. That's pretty good size market.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, and...
Before you get out, I want to show you a picture of both of them.
Our healthcare agencies that are here are both, they are actually looking at that. So they can pull out what's being prescribed. And they don't necessarily have to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, the whole system is being looked at. Like I said, it's not a quick fix.
And if I don't use it, I know that I can sell it for $15
but
a half.
What I can say is that the foundation of prevention and being aware of addiction and laying that foundation for our youth to make good choices and knowing how to build their self-esteem is all part of the picture. So, you know, we're highlighting prescription drugs right now. Next year, it could be we could, you know, go back through the spectrum and we'll start with ecstasy and then the marijuana. I mean, you know, marijuana is always going to be there, like alcohol and tobacco is going to be there. We'll see ebb and flows within the rates. Every substance and problem gambling is really linked to that foundation that we need to keep going. And so our hope is to really get back into the elementary schools in a non-threatening way. A lot of parents feel like my kid's too young to talk to about it.
Let me explain it, but I will never.
It's just, again.
The ones telling them that marijuana is medicine, so it's safe for the elementary kids to take it. There's a perception that it's
cookies.
Yeah.
Over
yeah.
There.
And so, you know, and whatever a person's belief around marijuana is, whether it has helped them or not helped them, there is no research or anything that I have ever seen that says giving youth access to marijuana or using marijuana does anything good for them because their brain is not developed until they're 19 to 24. And so there is damage that happens.
People are still developing even past that.
So I have one question for you. One of the things that really concerns me is that in the governor's budget that she presented to the legislators, she recommended that all possession of controlled substances be reduced to a misdemeanor.
Mm-hmm.
Cocaine, methamphetamine, heroin, prescription pills, all of that be reduced to a misdemeanor. The Association of Oregon Community Corrections Directors voted this last week to support that bill, which,
wow.
I'm not kidding. Our local community corrections director is upset about it. He voted no. But is the juvenile directors opposing that? Is there anybody from prevention, anybody from our youth saying, do you realize the perception that you're giving to our youth that if you decriminalize possession of these hardcore drugs, that it's going to have
amount?
Simple possession.
And
it's
six ounces of 6 ounces of cocaine is
yeah.
a lot.
So
well,
whatever,
I think so. I don't have
yeah.
a clue.
So whatever used to be the,
sure sounds like
the lowest level felony, whatever used to be the lowest level possession to get a felony
yeah.
is now an A misdemeanor, or would be. Now, our association, because that is, we weren't necessarily asked, and although there'd be a few probably in favor, there were overwhelmingly against it. I can say that. But the idea is to move to what they want to treatment model rather than a criminal model, and they want to get there by defelonizing it on the front end.
Don't
if that makes sense.
Life, because if it ruins your life, you're probably going to stay.
Now, I think what happened with community corrections directors, because as you know, Lily, they're paid for felonies they supervise, not misdemeanors. And a huge portion of your caseload are felony possession.
It will have an impact on half of our drug court in Josephine County.
But
how are our community
they came back and said they would fund it.
Policy decisions. I don't understand. I mean, I don't think they have that authority.
They're an association.
I know, but even as an extension of the county,
yeah.
I wouldn't want my parks directors saying, we don't need that recreational immunity kind of thing, as an equivalent policy decision, advocacy thing.
Yeah.
You don't get to make that decision. That's above your pay grade.
Sideways, it is. You've got to go to the park.
We get paid less than the director, but it, you know what I mean? There's
what I understand is that they were the last line of defense on that going forward. And so that's why I'm asking, from a standpoint of you see the impact on our kids, seeing that since marijuana recreationally is legal, there's no harm to our kids, so you're going to see an increase in use. If we're decriminalizing meth, heroin, cocaine, which we know are harmful to everybody, you are going to see an increase in youth use. I do think treatment is a good way to deal with those things. However, how do you get them into the treatment system unless
right.
they're caught with it in the first place?
Right.
So anyhow, I'm just bringing that up to you because with hearing that AOCCD voted to not oppose.
It's a bill that we tracked, but we didn't support or not support it. We're neutral on it as an association.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the short answer to the question, but.
It might be worth seeing, would they, you're concerned about the impact on our youth, thinking there's no harm. Can we take a stance and say we're concerned for our youth? It's just something I would throw out there, that
it sure
nobody's opposing it.
Sure makes sense, Lily.
I could be called Lily, I'm okay with that. But I appreciate the respect, too. Thank you.
Maybe we should do something. I'm going to go to AOC and say, how are our corrections, how are our associations making decisions, policy decisions? I mean, they're not elected officials. They're not like the assessors. They're not like the clerks. They're not beholden to us, but the community corrections departments.
They're authorized. Their association is actually commissioned through the Department of Corrections, and they answer to Jeremiah Stromberg. He runs those meetings.
He facilitates it, but they answer to their individual boards of commissioners. And I don't know if the rest of the board...
Sounds like they're skipping.
I would say there's 30 counties in the state who would not necessarily endorse that proposal. There's probably six that would, but the majority would say, no, I don't think... Or maybe there's at least they should have a conversation about it with the counties. And I bet that hasn't happened.
It might be worth you seeing if you can reach out. It's a huge concern to me. I understand that it's a funding issue. The other C...
But it doesn't sound as though their position actually improves their funding situation if it removes 50% of their clients because it's decriminalizing it as a it's not a felony anymore. You're making a policy decision that theoretically is going to impact your budgets.
Yes, it doesn't help the Community of Corrections budgets. It's the governor's budget that she was trying to decrease. The other side is she's trying to fix a problem in Multnomah County by creating a policy statewide that's not a problem in the rest of the state because they have a higher proportion of minorities being arrested for felony possession. She wants to lower those numbers where it's not a minority issue in the rest of the state. So it is a big concern. I think that reaching out to the other, you would have a good voice for that. From my standpoint, we are going to create a perception that there's no harm and it's going to increase use in our youth, and that's a huge thing that's a concern to me. I can tell you that the majority of people that I interviewed when I asked when you first used methamphetamine, it was approximately 12 years old. And so now if there's no
And
harm,
they didn't start using meth. I mean, you just don't start using meth one day.
You don't start with it. There's something leading up to it.
Correct.
Sorry, I didn't
interrupt
you. Could be.
Well, sadly, a lot of them, their parents introduced it to them. And we have generational issues with that.
Well, not that this is happening, but when you look at the history of, say, marijuana, when it was a felony in the 60s, state of Oregon, misdemeanor in the 70s, 80s, and now, and then a violation, and now legal. And so that's the order of things. It goes from, you know, felony, misdemeanor, violation, and legal. Not to say that that's the timeline that meth or heroin is on, but it certainly takes a lot of the societal, I guess, disapproval out of it.
Well, and there have been some studies related to CBD having an impact on seizures.
Yes.
So that is, CBD is a component of marijuana that is not, I mean, so that is one that's related to kids where they have seen an impact. But
I haven't seen the societal acceptance of marijuana, heroin, meth and heroin. I mean, marijuana has always been one of those, whatever, it's conjure, it's not that big a deal. What are you going to do after you do that? You become somewhat apathetic in society. I think that's generally accepted. But there's nothing positive about meth or heroin. Nobody ever says, well, wait a second, that's the only way I can function. You know, it solves this problem for me. No.
You're absolutely right.
That is, the only
Nobody's
way you can
that.
Function is by stealing your dad's tools and hawking them and stealing your dad's gun.
And that's okay.
And your mother's jewelry. And
no, nobody's
and
devastating.
Nobody's saying that's okay.
Yeah.
But I don't really mind if people want to go smoke pot or whatever and then, you know, they're just dropping out of society and do whatever they do. That's fine.
Other than the greed component where you have people wanting to steal to get more money from, you don't see the crime related to the marijuana.
Mm-mm.
I don't know if there's an impact on driving, but otherwise that's not the crime driver in our community. The greed portion, that's separate. That's a greed issue.
Yeah, and that's going to be the regard.
Meth heroin is driving crime in our community and violence and impact on other people in a big way.
Commissioner, you know, I think on the marijuana side, I went to an AOC at the conference. I went to a field trip to a dispensary at about 40 of us. And I asked the guy, he said, any questions? I said, sure. I said, so what's your responsibility for the use of marijuana? He goes, I have no responsibility. I said, I didn't think so. And he says, tell me what you're thinking about. And I said, well, I'm thinking about the fact that I'm a heating and air conditioning company, and if one of my guys happens to be working on the Trump chair and he cuts his finger off, and we take him out to the hospital with him and his finger, and they draw blood because it's an industrial accident. Says, you know, this, you know, your employee has substance in his veins because he smoked marijuana Friday night, and it stays in your system for 30 days. I said, right then, workman's comp says, we're not taking this because you should have made sure he wasn't in his system. And then losing a digit is 40% disability for the rest of your life. We're not paying that either. So I get sued, I lose my house, my everything I've earned, because that guy decided to smoke a bowl of marijuana before the Grand Pass Metro football game 2 weeks ago. And I says, and that's where I need to know, because I can't have anybody on the work. Now, where's my workforce? So I check everybody Monday morning when they come in, and I have to let half of them go because they had a bowl Friday night or a joint. And I says, and you're putting me at risk. Your industry, you're walking around with squads of $100 bills, and I just watched a Loomis truck pull away from here. You're happy as a pig in new mud, but you're putting my, everything I've ever earned at risk by your industry, and I want to know where your responsibility is. Do I come see you at the end of the day? And he said, boy, I've never had anybody ask me that. And I said, because maybe you've never had a businessman in here. It's all been my employees that come in. I just watch a construction worker walk in, buy a whole bunch of stuff, and walk out. It was Friday. I know what he's getting ready to do. He's going to go home and weed up. And he's going to go to work Monday morning. He might even be working for the city of Eugene. I have no clue. But by golly, he's a risk. He's a real liability risk for me as the employer. And I says, and you guys are walking scot-free. Where's the deal? And boy, he says, you know, I never thought of that. And I said, well, you better think about it, because you may be held responsible at some point in time. There's not that part of the law that's coming up. It is for alcohol, but alcohol's gone in a couple days. But marijuana, and it gets, I mean, whack, finger comes off, they draw blood, cough, workman's comp, but they'll draw blood every time a workman's comp, and a way to get out of it, and when they find out that, oh, it's not us, it's the employer. The employer failed to do his job. Bang, you're up the river. And I don't carry enough insurance to not lose my house and pay this guy 40% disability for the rest of his life.
Big deal.
Okay, anyway.
I would say strengthen your drug-free workplace policy, because it's still illegal federally, and you can still write that into your policy.
Yeah, it is. I mean, but can I afford to every Monday morning check somebody? No, I'm supposed to, but then you can't afford to buy my heat pump, because there's four other companies that aren't doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's called the free market, and it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, please.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming this morning.
I want to show you a picture before you two leave.
Okay.
I think we are.
We have a 2 p.m. general discussion. It's on the North Valley Industrial Sewer System. I'm not sure where. How did that get there, Terry? You're on the
request.
Was?
Yes. And Joel Brandis and Barry Gray and the company.
Mary Graves?
Larry Graves.
Larry Graves.
Air Force.
Yeah. Well, then it's a good idea.
I have so that company's coming. Okay, yeah. So we can't cancel because the company's coming. I do want to bring up one thing just as a heads up.
Yeah.
We've had two vehicular homicides in the last couple weeks, and there's been a lot of outcry in the community about the low bail amounts. Each county has a grid of bail amounts, of which ours has not been updated since 1997. So I spoke to our DA about it, who's also very upset about people bailing out on these issues. The sheriff, the district attorney, and Judge Baker will be meeting in the next week or so to look at that list and see about getting an update. 30 miles down the road, it's substantially different than what ours is here. And it's
just by those players, it sounds as though it's a Lipsick issue, and how come they haven't done it?
That's a very good question. So I will follow up with you. I just want you to know, because you're going to be getting questions. People are saying, what's the point of getting a levy when you have them not letting people out for $250 or $500 or whatever?
$5,000 on the one.
So, anyhow, that is on the list of getting updated in the next week or so.
I have two quick things. One of them is road authorization. I need authorization while you in your absence to sign a road plug vacation while you're gone, and then you can rectify it when you get back.
Ratify it
when you get back. Does that make sense?
Sounds good. I think I'm familiar with this one. It's been ongoing for
this
a while.
14 months this kid's been trying to get a road plug removed, and he's down to the final wire, and he's told, well, it'll be 2 weeks if you can't do it until after you guys get back. Or you can give me the authorization to sign it, and then you ratify it.
I would make a motion that the board authorizes Commissioner DeYoung to be able to sign on behalf of the board to vacate that road plug that we previously got updates on and know about.
As liaison to the Public Works Department. I'll second that. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. 3-0.
And then I just have a report on the fire chief meeting I had yesterday.
Do you mind doing that at 2?
We can do that too. That'd be just fine. Because I have a...
With nothing further, I appreciate you guys coming out. The board is adjourned at 10:26. Thank you.